Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mealer here. Great to have you with us today, and great to have back Melinda Myers as our guest. Nationally known gardening expert, TV radio host, author, columnist, over 20 years of horticultural experience. She's written over 20 garden books, a big presence on social media, and I tell you what, it's always fun to have her come by to talk. And we'll start by talking about fall container gardening to begin the program, and probably take some other questions as well relating to perhaps what's going on in your plant beds. But what gardening questions do you have? Join the conversation. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Melinda Myers, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Larry, and your listeners.
You know, I was looking at the plants on my front porch.
Okay.
And there's some, the three tables on the porch, and the ones that are a little shadier, the plants didn't look too bad, but there's one pot that gets the most sun that's not looking so good. And I'm wondering if I should just get rid of those plants and just get some new ones, or what do you suggest? Should we just remove the plants and get new ones, or can we refresh what we have?
You know, great question, and part of it's going to be how patient you are and how quick you want results and when we think that first killing frost is going to arrive. So things that look like they may not have time to recover. I did a little refresh on my pots that were looking a little sad from the heat and the drought this summer. You know, did a little trimming, did a little fertilizing, but that was a few weeks ago, so I'm banking on frost happening the middle of October, so they have time to really kind of look good. I have a couple that I think I'm just going to add to the compost pile.
Yeah.
And replace. And the nice thing is there's so many wonderful plants at garden centers these days. You know, they're bringing in lots of fresh material for us, ornamental cabbage and kale that takes that light frost. So even once we get that first frost, it'll look good. Swiss chard, which I was speaking at the domes yesterday, and we were having a conversation about bright light Swiss chard, which I love as ornamental. And my friend goes, "It's edible," and I'm like, "I know, but it's not on my top of my list." Sorry, folks. I know it's nutritious and pretty. You know, in the grasses and some of the sunflowers and rudbeckias. So you can, and I think the other part is the colors are perfect for fall, and it just kind of freshens things up. I think some of our plants are tired. I think some of us are tired of, right, fighting the weeds, the drought, and the heat. So this kind of just adds that fresh look. You know, you take down that one plant, Larry, that's not looking so good. It may change your mind about the other kind of borderline ones. But I think just freshening things up just kind of gives us that last hurrah for fall before winter sets in.
Yeah, I do that every year, as a matter. I spend a few bucks. It's not really all that expensive to replace. I mean, in my mind anyway, to have a really nice looking garden or some plots in fall. I mean, it's just nicer.
Exactly.
Hydrangeas are a very popular shrub, and there are many new varieties out there. And we get questions about hydrangeas a lot on the show. How should we care for them at this time of year?
You know, less is better. So I know that's a hard thing for us. So let's start with probably the most popular right now are the panicle hydrangeas. You can get them anywhere from a couple feet tall to 12 feet tall. You know, limelight was really one that I think started the craze, and now we've got them in all different sizes. They need minimal pruning, and they set their flowers on new growth. Leaving them stand for winter is just, I like the winter interest of those dried flower heads. You know, for me, I think that's beautiful. We live in the north, and so, you know, we're looking at things like seed heads and dried flowers. That gives us winter interest. And then minimal pruning if you need to next spring. I like to do my pruning the end of winter, early spring before growth begins, because, one, the wounds tend to close more quickly. If there's been animal or winter damage, we can take care of that at the same time. And the panicle hydrangeas need very little pruning, weak crossing branches like that. So leaving them stand, if they haven't been mulched, mulching is important. And then watering. We had a dry summer for most of us. And if the fall is dry, we want to make sure our plants receive sufficient, not overwatered, going into winter, because if the soil's too dry, we get a lot of root death. So that's easy. Just mulch it if you need to. Pull the mulch back from the stems. The smooth or Annabelle-type hydrangeas, those are the ones that have typically white flowers. Invincible Spirit has the pink ones, always pink, no matter the pH. But those are the ones we typically would see in shade or part shade locations. A lot of people cut them back for winter because they don't like the look of the plant. Again, this is kind of a, does it look messy to you or is it winter interest? If you decide to prune and you're tired of floppy growth, one of the things I like to do is cut them back to about 15 inches above the ground, all the stems, whether you do it after it's dormant this fall or next spring. Then take half of those stems right back to the ground. Those 15-inch tall stems provide support for that new growth coming from the ground, so it reduces that risk of floppy growth on those Annabelle-type hydrangeas. And so, or wait until late winter, early spring to do your pruning. The big challenge are those repeat-blooming big-leaf hydrangeas. Those are the ones that are pink. Yeah, exactly. Sounds like you've tried a few, Larry.
Yes, I have.
Me too. And, you know, they're beautiful. The big-leaf hydrangeas are gorgeous in Tennessee and Georgia and the Pacific Northwest. They're challenging here. The old varieties, like the Nikko type, they bloom just on old wood. The repeat bloomers, Endless Summer, Summer Crush, Blushing Bride, they're supposed to bloom on old wood if it survives. Usually doesn't here. And if your plant dies back to the ground, puts up new growth, you should get flowers on the new growth. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. So I like to increase my odds. So I'll put hardware cloth around the plants. That's like that hard chicken wire with small mesh openings. Stick it in the ground so the voles don't find a nice warm place to overwinter. After the ground freezes, put some straw or marsh hay or evergreen boughs in for insulation and leave the plant standing and hope that some of the growth at the base that maybe has flower buds already started survives. If not, prune back everything that's dead. Once, you know, look for the bud swelling. Nothing swells, prune it back to the ground. Fertilize once in the spring. And the reason I recommend Milorganite is not only is it low nitrogen, so it won't interfere with flowering, but when the microorganisms work on it, it releases some of the phosphorus and potassium bound in the soil, and it has non-leaching phosphorus, and that promotes blooming. And when I've recommended this, almost every gardener, I've just had a few, it didn't work, have had great success nudging their plant into bloom. And then keeping the soil moist but not wet. And those will tell you when they need watering, right? They really wilt quickly.
Yeah.
So moist soil, fertilizing in the spring, proper pruning, and really, less we do in the fall, the better for the plants. But I realize I probably have that stuff looks nice to me, and for someone that likes things neat and tidy, that may not be as attractive. So kind of have to decide what your garden goals are.
Well, Carla, I think, and Madison might have a garden goal here to talk about, so let's go there. Carla, hi, thanks for calling.
Good morning, and thanks for your program. Say, I received a miniature rose plant for Easter. It came in like a 4-inch pot. I put that miniature rose bush in a 12-inch pot, and it has continued to bloom all summer long in the backyard. Is there a way to winter that over outside? If I brought it in, would I even have enough light to keep it alive?
Great question, Carl. And those miniature roses are often sold throughout the winter because they're so nice to put on the windowsill or give as a gift like you received at Easter. A good sunny window, if you have artificial light, that will help. Often they're attacked by spider mites because of the hot, dry air in the house, so just monitor for that. Some of them are hardy to our area. It's hard to tell what variety they were using, but many miniature roses are hardy in Wisconsin. The other thing you could do, and I overwinter a lot, and I would think it'd probably be okay in an unheated garage, even if it's kind of borderline hardy. And I know Larry and I have talked about how we overwinter our things in the garage. Some insulation underneath, maybe a board, old carpet, set it, surround it. I usually use bags of shredded paper because I always have shredded paper. And then that insulates, insulates the roots. And then water whenever the soil is thawed and dry. But if you're concerned about hardiness, if there's a tag with the variety, check, you know, go online, check and see if there's any hardiness ratings. And that will tell you whether it'll make it outside or in your garage. If not, try a good sunny window. Add artificial lights to increase your chance of success, and then give it good care like you do your house plants. I've had pretty good success. Always watch for those spider mites, though. So occasionally spritzing the foliage with clear water usually helps keep the population down.
Carla, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, Jan in Middleton has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jan.
Hi, good morning. When we built our house a long time ago, it got down in the back in an area where the water comes in the back door. So this summer we had it dredged out and discovered that about 6 inches down from the soil is clay. And we live in the woods, and so we're trying to put something on there or get something to grow on that will keep the soil, whatever is left there, intact. We have a lot of moss. We do not do any pesticides or anything on our lawn, so there's a lot of moss in the backyard and a little few grasses and clovers and things. I've got some seed down with straw on it, but what else can I do to nurture that soil so that everything stays growing?
So, Jan, let me just ask. So they've managed the water problem for you, so they've changed the grade or whatever was causing the water to collect by the back door, I guess is what you're saying, by your house? Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So it's all taken care of. You don't need a French drain or anything to manage the water to get it away. That's all done, whatever they did. Okay.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay, good. Sorry, I just didn't want to give you advice that wouldn't help you. So one of the things I would suggest is sedges. There's a lot of really good sedges. Our native Pennsylvania sedge, blue sedge, they're carex, that group of carex, C-A-R-E-X, that are excellent. When you look at fox sedge, is pretty aggressive, but it will take some sun or shade and moist soil. So one of the things looking for Prairie Nursery, I know Neil's been a guest here with Larry. He's got excellent resources and good information, so a good place to do some research. But I would check on some of those sedges. They're kind of grass-like plants. So they give you some nice texture. Many times they'll compete with the moss. So, you know, the moss is covering the soil, so that's one good thing if you don't mind that, and then popping in some of those. Hostas are pretty tolerant. You may want to do some vertical mulching, and basically that's taking an auger bit on your cordless drill, and drilling some holes through that heavy clay soil and inserting some compost in there, and even top dressing with compost or even shredded leaves this fall, because as they break down, they'll improve the soil. It takes time, but by using that cordless drill with the auger bit, you're opening it up, letting water and moisture through and helping to break down that clay a little faster. So you might want to do that combination, what's called the vertical mulching, you know, a little bit of compost soil surface, drill some holes in the soil, and then look for things like your sedges. We've got a lot of natural sedges that I think would work well. Canadian ginger might do well in that spot. Once it takes hold, if it's happy, it can be aggressive, but, you know, it tolerates shade very well. And I've seen it growing on a variety of soils, too, and pretty heavy clay soils up in Mequon. So that might be another option, too. So I would look at those.
Jan, good luck, and thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Melinda Myers, our guest today. It's great to have her back. Certainly a nationally known gardening expert and TV radio host. She's got a great website, too, which I want to talk with her about at some point, melindamyers.com. Questions? Give a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Melinda Myers as we take your gardening questions for the fall season. Number to call 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. And let's go to Perry in Oconto. Hi, Perry.
Hi. Hi, Larry. Hi, Melinda.
Hi.
My question, Melinda, is this, and I don't know if there's anything that would grow, but I have some arborvitas, and it's just, I have a sandy dirt type of soil, but it's, there's nothing that's growing underneath there, and the problem is when the dog runs through in the wet morning, it brings all that wet dirt back in the house. Is there anything that would possibly grow with such a low light?
Have you tried anything yet?
Nothing. I haven't tried anything, so I'm...
Okay. You knew you had a battle ahead of you, right? There's a couple things that I would try. There's this cool plant that a friend of mine had shared on Facebook. So I bought some, and I'm loving it. It's golden ragwort, Pacara, P-A-C-K-E-R-A, golden ragwort, shade tolerant. I have sandy, rocky soil where I planted it. It's really thriving despite my benign neglect. I think that's kind of ignoring it is what I'm saying. And I've had great success. Yellow flowers, so you get a little brightness in the spring. Nice leaves. It can be assertive. So, I mean, his picture was pretty intense planting, but it was beautiful, and that works. The Canadian ginger I mentioned to Jan might be another option. A friend of mine who I went to visit one time, pulls up the lower branches of her spruce and goes, do you know what grows under a spruce? And here's Canadian ginger thriving in that situation. Anything you plant there, you may have to give it sufficient moisture, which your arborvitaes enjoy too, till it gets established, right? Because the arborvitaes are going to block some of the rainfall getting down to the ground, but also absorb the moisture. So whatever you choose to grow, that's important to keep that moist. But I think those two would be some nice low-growing ground covers under your arborvitae. And hopefully, I don't know how dog-tested they are in terms of putting up with your dog running through them, but those might be two. Pennsylvania sedge is a little taller. That's the sedge we see growing in woodlands where we see these little tufts of grass-like plants coming up in the shady areas. Those are going to be a little bit taller, but that might be another option. A lot of those low-growing ground covers that are cultivated, not native, we've been finding out are invasive. So, you know, you really want to be careful using some of those that have been recommended in the past because as beautiful as they were and how well they worked a little too well and are invading our woodlands. So the golden ragwort is native, and so is the Canadian ginger, and then looking for a native sedge might be another good option for you.
Perry, good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Vivian in Deerfield, Illinois, we are on to you. Hi, Vivian.
Hi, nice to be able to talk to you. Well, a couple years ago, I guess we had some new dirt put in a front garden area, and in the garden area I had a number of perennials, had hostas, a lot of hostas. Suddenly, we started seeing this invasive ivy coming up, and when I noticed it, it was higher, it started to get higher than the hosta. It had like a Queen Anne's lace flower. I don't know what kind of ivy it is, but my husband and I have been digging it up by hand. There's a whole big area we've cleared. It keeps coming up. I'm wondering if we can cover it with black plastic and leave that over the winter and if that would help to get rid of it. So that's That's my question.
Mm. Okay. And when and I didn't quite hear the comment on the flower. Does it look sort of like a morning glory bloom?
No, it looks like Queen Anne's lace.
Oh. Okay. So there is an old ground cover, bishop's weed, that is very common, and the leaves kind of remind me a bit of poison ivy. The flower looks like a Queen Anne's lace. It's a ground cover. The flower sounds like it. And it is very difficult to get rid of, which I don't need to tell you. So what some people have done, if you covered it with black plastic or clear plastic, which tends to heat up deeper in the soil and solarize, you're going to kill your hostas and things. So you're going to need to remove your good plants if you want to keep those. Edge the garden bed in case any of those plants have, you know, any of the roots of rhizomes have spread outside of the garden bed. You don't want them feeding the plants inside. But if you remove your desirable plants, I recommend potting them up and observing, because the last thing you want to do is get rid of it in the planting bed and then put your good plants back in and they have a little rhizome after all that work you've done. So, yes, solarizing would work. Clear plastic, again, heats a little bit deeper. Black plastic suffocates, and so either one of those should help. Using a total vegetation killer, unfortunately, the organic ones only burn out the tops and don't kill the roots, so it's just repetition. So you're trying to starve the plant to death, which you could do by cutting it back at ground level if you go for the organic total vegetation killers. I know it's a tough one to control, but it sounds like goutweed or bishop's weed, and it probably came, you know, that's the problem with, you know, what was in the soil, any seeds or things that may have been unwanted, or even with a plant that somebody shared with you that you may have put in and those rhizomes finally took off. So I know it's a battle. And persistence, you just have to be more persistent than that weed. So hopefully this helps. You're going to need good luck.
Yes, you are, Vivian, but thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, Cal in Sugar Camp has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Cal.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to remind everybody and ask Melinda what she thought about bringing in geraniums, and especially those elephant and patients. I mean, they'll bloom all winter and keep your house really bright, and they really take a lot of abuse. Sometimes I put impatiens in a pot, and I put one of those clear veg bags, put the pot in one of those bags, and just bring the plastic up about 3 inches above the lip of the pot, and that little bit of extra humidity makes a big difference.
You know, that's a great point. If they're is bringing some things that we, I always laugh because I do it every year too. And sometimes by March, I've probably brought in a few too many things that probably shouldn't have been brought in. Like you're suggesting some really good, tried and true, easy plants. And I'm always pushing the limit going, why did I do that? And every year. But, you know, we find out. I saved a lantana last year and put it out in the garden, and it started flowering late. And, you know, and I'm like, okay, I know I can do that. I'm not going to do that again this year, but I bet I'll be bringing some in again. So thank you for that. I've even had cannas I've grown under artificial lights or in the sunny window that bloom for me in the winter. It weren't the prettiest looking plant, but a canna flower in March or February, not too bad.
Kind of nice.
Thank you. And I like your suggesting about the bag. You're not closing it, but just giving it that added humidity. Good suggestion. And then watching for insects, because when we bring plants in, that's the downside, right? I try to isolate them if you can for a couple weeks. Watch for any mites, aphids, or other insects. You know, there's lots of good organics like Summit Year-Round Spray Oil or insecticidal soap that, you know, follow the directions, make sure it's usable on the plants you're treating. But, you know, treating in advance, you're going to bring fewer in. Or yellow sticky traps, they're back in vogue because they work. You know, they won't take care of everybody, but they'll keep the populations down so your plants can thrive.
Cal, good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Deb in Mahenry, Illinois, it's your turn. Hi, Deb.
Hi there. Yes, I also have a question about bringing plants in. I got a trumpet flower from like a donation thing where they were selling plants for donation money. But she told me I need to bring it in over winter and put it into a cool, dark spot. Can you, and also I am worried about those flies and gnats and whatever that might come in. Number one, can I repot it before I do that? And number two, like, how often do I actually water it or, you know, and all that?
Do you know? Do you have a botanical name for that by any chance? Because I know a couple of different plants known by as trumpet flower, mostly are hardy in our area.
You know, she said that this one I have to keep it into a pot, and I have to bring it in, and I don't have that botanical name. And
it,
she made it
really,
into more like a tree.
Okay,
has 8-inch or 12-inch trumpet-looking flowers. The flowers are giant.
Okay, I know it as angel trumpet. It sounds like a Datura brugmansia. Okay, thank you. And you can either grow it as a house plant. They are very toxic. The seeds are very toxic, and I'm sure you're not eating them, but just if you have pets or anything, keep an eye on those. So you can either grow it as a house plant. Some people have good success growing it in a cool place, letting it go somewhat dormant, kind of like you would your hibiscus, where you're keeping it alive, it's holding on to a few leaves, and you're just watering it often enough to keep the roots from totally drying. So those would be the two options. If you have room, putting it in a sunny window under an artificial light, watering it just like you would your other house plants, that's probably the way to be the most successful. Letting it go dormant in your basement in a cool, dark spot sometimes will work. Some of our basements are too warm, so the plants grow and they don't get the light they need, so it's challenging. So, you know, some people put them in a cooler room so they don't grow as much and can tolerate the lower light, water less often. And you're just trying to keep enough leaves on there to keep the plant alive, watering less often, water thoroughly, let it dry out a couple inches on the top, water again, but it won't dry out as quickly. And that's a second way that you can overwinter that. And then I also saw somebody, a garden center had a video, and I haven't done this, where they just cut it back and put it in a, you know, more of a dormant setting. If you have room, try to keep it in a sunny window, either in a cool room or like your other house plants. And then again, you bring up a good point. If you can isolate it, if you have a screened-in porch or areas where bugs are less likely to get to the plant, you know, checking the underside of leaves, the stems. You know, I always like to use organic options when I'm controlling pests inside for pets, grandkids, kids. They shouldn't be eating this because it is a toxic plant, so be very careful. But, you know, if you do find them, you know, strong blast of water, you may want to do that before you come in. If the plant's growing fine, I would wait till late winter to repot it because it's going to be growing more actively at that time, and then just go into a slight one size larger container. As long as it's looking good at this point, I would wait until the end of the dormancy, you know, winter, when it's really struggling just to survive, and then do my repotting.
Deb, good luck, and thank you very much for calling. Melinda, you mentioned little space or no space, and Mary sent us an email to ask how she can keep a large glazed clay pot outside through winter without it cracking. It's heavy, and she doesn't have any indoor storage.
You know, great question. I was a small space gardener for many years. And so emptying that glazed pot, storing it on a board or something else, preferably something, and then covering it with plastic so that, you know, you're not getting moisture. You want to get the soil out because when the soil freezes or if water collects and you get ice, and when water freezes, it expands, and that can cause the cracking. And so covering it, too, will help prevent that. So if you've got a place that you could not put it directly on the soil and then turn it upside down and cover it with a garbage bag, that should help. So it's really trying to keep that dry and covered. So that
No soil inside.
And no soil, thank you. No soil.
Jeannie in Minocqua, let's go to you now. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi. I'm calling about some Russian sage plants that I planted last year. I live in Minocqua,
And we have lots and lots of deer, and they eat everything. And we have kind of red, sandy soil, and it's not really conducive to growing anything real well. And so last year I planted these Russian sage plants, and this year they really don't look any bigger than they were last year. And I was wondering, the only thing I can think of is maybe it's the acid. Do I need to do some lime or something so they grow next year?
So what size pot were they in? Were they in a big gallon pot, or were they in a small quart size pot, you know, a smaller like 4-inch pot?
They were bare roots.
Oh, bare root. Okay, so here's a couple things. There's an old adage that the first year perennials sleep, the second year they creep, and the third year they leap. And so, you know, they tolerate sandy soil. I think they should be fine with your soil acidity up there. I haven't seen any, you know, my soil tends to be a little more neutral, slightly alkaline where I've got mine growing. They probably do like a little bit on the alkaline side, but I wouldn't do any adjusting to the pH yet. So I would give them one more year, and that's where you live, right? So you're able to make sure they got the water they needed, even though they're drought tolerant once established. So I'm assuming you were able to water them to keep them going through their first year in the garden, especially being bare root. I would do minimal fertilization. You could do something in the spring, a low nitrogen, slow release to kind of give them a nudge. But I would give them another year before I do a whole lot with the soil amending or anything or changing the pH, because I think it's just that first year getting established, it's just taking longer.
Yeah. I've done fishing in the Minocqua area, and I've seen Russian sage looking pretty good up there.
Oh, good. Thank you, Larry. That's great. And so good. I appreciate that. So I think it's just the fact it was bare root and small to start with. And, you know, patience is one of those tools that's important as a gardener, but a hard one to manage.
Jeannie, thank you very much for calling. Let's go to Russ in Belleville next. Hi, Russ.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Just wanted to put in a plug for another sedge that might work in some of those semi-shaded locations. A species called Carex springdalii. Common name is long-beak sedge. It's like the Pennsylvania sedge on steroids. It has beautiful nodding panicle seeds that self-seed. It's just a great plant that I think is underutilized.
Thank you. That's a great point. I know that's one of the rain garden plants that Milwaukee Metro Sewage District offers for residents doing.
And what was the name of the plant again?
Well, the Latin name is Carex springdalii.
Okay.
Common name, I think, is long-beak sedge.
Okay.
I get my seeds and plants often from Prairie Moon Nursery up in Winona, Minnesota. No one else in the Midwest carries a greater selection of seeds and plants, and they're just outstanding people to deal with.
That's what I've heard, too, about Prairie Moon as well. Thank you for that. I really appreciate that, Russ. I'll tell you, there's a lot of cool sedges out there, and so thank you for that. That's what I love about your show, Larry. Everybody helps each other.
Yes, Russ, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's go to Ann in Milwaukee next. Ann, thank you for calling.
Hello, good morning. I have a question. I have two 50-year-old ash trees in my front yard, and they're the only shade there. They've been treated for EAB 5 times in the last 10 years by various professional tree services, but both are showing dieback, which is concerning, and the worst one is showing at about 25% dieback this year. The master arborist who's currently treating the tree says the problem with the worst tree is that it was struck by lightning a while ago, even though there's no visible charring. And the other tree he thinks might have a canker. And I've had other arborists come, and they've said that they think the vertical curling on the bark on both trees means that they have EAB. So I'm wondering if I need to find some kind of independent arborist who doesn't have a horse in the race to help me figure out what's wrong with these trees. Are they worth saving or not? And I couldn't find anything like that on the Wisconsin Arborist website.
You know, most consulting arborists do have a business, and so they obviously, a certified arborist is
you know, been trained or has training, education, keeps up with their profession, and so that's why I always recommend a certified arborist. Sounds like you went there on the Wisconsin Arborist website. I don't know if images would be enough for PJ Leash, the UW insect disease diagnostic, runs the diagnostic lab, if that would be enough for him to help you. I don't know, Larry, if you have any other thoughts of anyone that would come to mind.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't hurt to give some photos or send some, you know, some photos to PJ just to see. The good thing about PJ is that he's quick to respond.
True. And I think he could give you some direction. I don't know what your municipality, where you live, some municipalities are monitoring private trees because of the impact on the street tree collection. All they can do is say no.
Yeah, well, and Ann's in Milwaukee. So.
Oh, she's in Milwaukee. Sorry, and I knew I was listening. Give Milwaukee Bureau of Forestry a call. All they can say is no. I don't know what their policy is right now, but I know, you know, they're trying to save some of the ash trees. So a lot of municipalities are kind of concerned with what's going on private property. So they're part of, I think they're still part of the Department of Public Works in the city of Milwaukee. And then I'd also send some pictures to PJ.
And PJ Leash is at the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. And, I mean, get some good photos, clear photos, and send to him. And he can probably, well, he'll tell you if he knows.
Right.
For
right.
sure.
Exactly.
If he doesn't know, he won't, you know, he won't try and guess it. Thank you again, Ann, for calling.
Yeah,
Melinda
luck.
Myers, our guest today. It's always great to have her with us for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Melinda Myers, nationally known gardening expert. Always great to have her come by to talk with you about what's going on in your garden. And if you have some questions, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Melinda, I was looking at, I love to go to your website, melindamyers.com, and I see you've got some personal appearances coming up.
I do, and we've had a few callers from Illinois, and anyone in the southeast area of Wisconsin and northern Illinois, I'll be at Pasquazi Home and Garden in Lake Bluff, Illinois tomorrow talking about hydrangeas. You said you get calls. We do. I do, too. So we're going to talk about year-round care, go into more detail than I was able to do. I had some technical difficulties on my Wednesday webinar. I love technology. So I'm re-recording it, and we'll be posting when that one is planning and plant fall is for planning and planting and energy-saving landscape. So the recording will be up soon. We'll put a notice on my website and Facebook. And then on Tuesday, I'm doing fall landscape and garden care, so talking in detail about, pardon me, what to do for your native plants, your cultivated plants, rain gardens, trees, and shrubs to help get you set for winter. And then a week from tomorrow, on Saturday, I'll be at Ebert's Greenhouse Village answering questions. So when people are coming out buying their plants for their fall containers and picking up their pumpkins, I'll be on hand to answer questions. They have fun events. I always take my grandkids there, and they have a train, a little kind of tractor-pulled train. You can go to the pumpkin patch, and it's a good excuse, right? You bring the grandkids and children to go, so you can go to the pumpkin patch. So it's fun events. There's information on both the websites, Pasquazi Home and Garden in Lake Bluff, Illinois, just north of Chicago, and then also Ebert's Greenhouse Village in Exonia. And the registration for my webinar is on my website. And I just require, it's free. They're both free, but it keeps, you know, from getting Zoom bombed by requiring registration.
Makes sense. And melindamyers.com, go there. You'll see all that information as well. And Melinda's last name is, by the way, I always like to say that, is spelled M-Y-E-R-S, M-Y-E-R-S, melindamyers.com. There we go. Lynn in Waukesha emailed, wonders how much should she cut back the cardinal bush and China rose? in fall?
So I'm guessing, I'm not sure if she's talking cardinal flower. I'm not sure when she says cardinal bush if she means a cardinal flower, which is a perennial. And cardinal flowers, you can leave stand for the winter, and birds will eat the seeds. They're kind of a short-lived perennial if it's the cardinal flower, and you can leave that standing. Cardinal bush, I'm cheating.
Or China, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay, so and I think that's what she means. There's also weigelas. There's a cardinal, red cardinal weigela, which is a shrub, and I'd leave it standing because it sets its flower buds for late already for next spring, and then you'll get sporadic flowers. So it's more of a woody plant. But if you have a cardinal flower, just leave it stand, cut it back a couple inches above the ground next spring. But leaving it stand increases that. And then the China
rose.
China rose. So I'm wondering if that she's talking about a rose of Sharon. Common names are always a little challenging to make sure we're talking about the same plant. There is a China rose that, that is Rosa chinensis, if she's talking about that. But I'm wondering, because it's hardy to zone 6, and so if she has that, she might want to leave it stand for added sturdiness if she's leaving it out in the garden. And then I would do some winter mulching after the ground freezes. That's another one I'd do, the hardware cloth around, let it freeze, so sink a few inches in the ground, and then put some evergreen boughs. If it's a true China rose, which is a Rosa chinensis, some people call Rose of Sharon. I think that's a common name you may hear for Rosa Sharon, which is a shrub and not, you know, that just leaves standing too. So here's what I'm going to suggest. maybe try, if you can get the botanical names, and please be patient with me, folks, info@melindamyers.com. If you get the botanical names, and then I know I'm answering for the right plants that you're asking about. I'm just worried with common names. You know, pansies have 500 different common names around the world. That's my excuse anyway, Larry.
Okay. Well, let's go to Pam in Kellogg, Minnesota next. Hi, Pam.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
My question is, this spring I found some Kentucky coffee seeds and started a little tree, and it's just adorable, but it's only about 6 inches tall. And I know if I leave it outside, a mouse or rabbit or something will get it. So what can I do for the winter?
Well, a couple things. If you have a sheltered location and you could put a little cage over it, you could make your own. What I always do is Gardener Supply has these great things. I call it the garden catalog, the toy catalog for gardeners. But they have this great chicken wire frame that you could sit on top and anchor it, or make your own. You know, if you could cage it in, you're right. And especially if you took some hardware cloth, sunk it in the ground 4 inches around, and then put a top on it. In the permanent location, or if you leave it in the pot, sink the pot in there. You can try overwintering it in your basement in a cool, dark location. If it starts to grow, you're going to need to put it in a sunny window and hope for the best. It's always hard to keep plants that normally grow outside and winter outdoors in our environment alive inside. So if you have a way, or put them in your unheated garage. Now, I have to tell you, my sad story is not last winter, the year before, voles overwintered in my garage along with my plants. And so, yeah, and it was so discouraging when I pulled them out, and half of them were dead because they burrowed in, they ate the roots, they ate the stems. So last fall, I treated with Plants Kit animal repellent because it works on voles when I stored my plants in my unheated garage. So an unheated garage, and in a little pot, what you could do is set in a box, put some packing peanuts that don't degrade, or something else to insulate the roots, water when the soil is thawed and dry. And if you're concerned about voles getting in the garage, you might want to treat with an animal repellent like Plant Skid. But I think an unheated garage, if you can't do something outside to protect it, an unheated garage would be a good second option if you have one available, Pam.
There you go, Pam. Thank you so much for calling. Dave in Marshfield, what's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. When we moved into our house about 25 years ago, there was a ring of, my wife called it snow on the mountain. And that was contained nicely, but as time went on and things got shifted around, somehow it got moved into the into the edge of the woods. And now it's covering a really a large area in the woods, and I think it's killing off everything else that might be underneath it because it's pretty thick. So the question is there some cheap and easy way to get rid of that without killing what might be dormant underneath?
Yes, yeah, snow on the mount. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I have no problem being toxic. Like, if you say, go ahead and spray the whole thing with Roundup, I'm okay with that.
Okay, so Bishop's weed or snow on the mountain, and I think this is the same weed that the other person had in their garden, and it is considered invasive. It's on the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources invasive plant species. And one of the reasons I wanted to mention is that there's lots of good information. So what you can do is use something that contains glyphosate, like Roundup, if you don't mind. And then what I would recommend doing, if you could paint it on the leaves, then it's absorbed and kills the roots. You'll probably have to do several applications because there'll probably be either some plants you miss or some where the rhizome hasn't sprouted, right? So you'll get them. But if you do that, that helps a lot. Mowing and cutting can help it from spreading. But if you want to kill the roots, treating those leaves, and then just protecting anything that's good nearby. There is concern about Roundup's impact on soil. So that's why I'd say if you can, especially in a woodland setting, just paint it on. Or, you know, sometimes I'll use like a piece of cardboard or poster board to wrap it around so that if I spray it once it's dry and if it touches a good plant, it's not going to harm it. So you try to isolate the spray that way. So those would be my that would be my recommendation. That's going to probably be the fastest way to manage it, but you are going to have to keep after it for a couple of years.
Dave, good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Chris in Gutenberg, Iowa, I bet. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. First, can you transplant rhubarb in the fall, and can it grow in a raised garden bed?
Yes to both. Actually, a lot of people prefer to transplant their rhubarb in the fall. I'm kind of a spring rhubarb transplanter, but, you know, it's a tough, tough plant. And so moving it, kind of like we transplant our peonies in the fall, too, as they're dying back, pretty tough and hardy. What you may want to do, most raised beds, the only downside of a raised bed, and I know why you're asking, so I appreciate that, because it's elevated, it's exposed to extreme cold. And so if you could put your rhubarb towards the center where there's a little more soil insulating it, it is really reliably hardy, so it has a really good chance of surviving. And then it sounds like you're a successful raised bed gardener, so you know watering is always one of the critical things, right? Those raised beds dry out. So, yes, you can transplant it. Yes, you could put it in the raised bed. You know, if you're feeling nervous, maybe split it and put half in another sunny location, you know, where you could let it grow, where it's in the ground and then half in the raised bed, or pot up some and sink that pot in a vacant part of the garden for winter. And then if the part you put in the raised bed doesn't survive, you've got a backup plan. And if it survives and you don't have jumping worms, you can share that with someone else who would like a rhubarb plant.
There you go, Chris. Thank you. Anne in Appleton, do you have a quick question?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. There's three, what I believe are boxwood bushes in the front of my house, and I just moved here at the end of March. And at that time, you know, during the summer, they were kind of smaller and more rounded, and now, you know, they got a lot of sun because they're on the south side of the house, and so they've grown. And I'm just wondering, I'd like to trim them a little because they're looking a little mangy. Is this a good time of the year to trim them, or is spring or some other time better?
I am so glad you asked, Anne. I'm a huge fan of
doing our evergreen pruning springtime, because here's what happens. When you clip out that outer edge, you're going to expose those inner leaves that have been shaded and protected all summer long, and so they're more subject to winter injury, especially the south side, we're going to have a little more winter sun, so you may get some burning and desiccation. So leaving those kind of mangy looking for now. But then when you're doing your pruning in the spring, if you've had some sunburn or if you can provide any kind of shading to protect them from the winter wind and winter sun, that's not a bad idea. But leave that growth if you can stand it, or just if you really have a few of those ugly stems, prune those, but leave most of it intact, and then do your pruning, before growth begins in spring. And then if you need to touch it up, do it. Get your pruning done before August 1st so that the plants have time to harden off. But usually spring and then early summer, if you need a touch-up, is usually sufficient.
Melinda Myers, our guest, nationally known gardening expert, TV and radio host, author and columnist. Her website, is melindamyers.com. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for spending some of your day with us. And really thanks to Melinda Myers as well, who is our guest today, nationally known gardening expert. And she's here to answer your questions. I hope you'll join in. You can call us at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. And Melinda, we got an email from Peter in Reedsburg. He called to say he has a red twig dogwood. The variety is Bergeson Compact that has outgrown its space. He wanted to do a hard prune last spring, but he didn't get it done. Can he do a hard prune now, or should he wait until a late winter or spring?
You know, as soon as it's dormant, I'd wait till it's good and dormant, because, you know, and he's in Reedsburg, so they may be a little further ahead or with the hot, dry weather. But once it's dormant, you can do your pruning anytime during the dormant season. One of the cool things about red twig dogwood, for people who just want to kind of invigorate, not really take it down to the ground, is it's color-coded. It was one I'd always use with my students. Take the brown ones, the old ones, to the ground. Because the new growth is red, and so, yes, the dormant season is fine. That will work fine. Or, you know, again, if you want to enjoy what red twigs are left in their space, you know, if they're still fitting into the space, just not quite as short as you want, you may want to enjoy the red stems and take it down at the end of the season.
Dawn in Madison emailed to ask, what's the advantage of leaving garden cleanup until spring, or what are the advantages?
Great question. And, you know, and a lot of us, I think there's a huge change happening in how we manage our landscapes. I always left things healthy perennials stand for the winter. One, I like the winter interest. Two, research showed that really increased the hardiness of your perennials. They capture the stems. You don't have open cuts for the stems to decompose, you know, to get water down and encourage rot. Many provide homes for pollinators. We're finding out more and more about that. Native bees use a lot of the hollow stems, beneficial insects. Birds love the seeds. You know, if it wasn't for the songbirds visiting my landscape in the winter, it'd be really depressing for years, right? So those are the advantages. Always in the fall, getting rid of diseased or insect pest-infested plants, so there's not a source for next year. Hostas, I leave my hosta stand, but if you're concerned about foliar nematodes or slug eggs often overwinter under the leaf debris, you might want to cut your perennials, your hostas, back. Wait until they're good and dormant, though, because then they've had all that energy going into their roots for next year's growth. Bearded iris, iris borer lay their eggs in the leaf debris, so removing any dead leaves, and you may want to even cut back those.
Powdery mildew, I know Brian would recommend getting rid of them. It's really hard for me when I see it on my bee balm that I know. You know, and so, sorry, Brian, I leave mine up. But Brian would recommend, and he's the expert in that area, taking them down so you have less powdery mildew. Peonies, definitely cut those to the ground. You know, botrytis blight, phytophthora blight, and powdery mildew, cut those back just above, you know, a couple inches above the soil surface and dispose of the plant debris. So good to leave things. And I used to recommend, honestly, Larry, I'm like, okay, March comes, get out there and clean up. But we're finding that's still too early. We want to wait till we have consistently some 50-degree days so that a lot of those native beneficial insects overwintering in the stems have a chance to get out. Or if you cut them back early, then bundle them and put them out of sight so that they still have time to leave the plants, if there are any in there. And that helps. And then I was recently, in the last couple of years, have just learned a lot more about our native bees. And leaving the stems, when you do your cleanup, between 18 and 24 inches tall, you know, leaving some of those stems standing, the native bees use those for homes. The new growth masks those dead stems, so you won't be looking at them, and then they eventually decompose. I just came across a really interesting video on, I think it was Landscaping for Pollinators from the University of Minnesota. And it was really, she had a nice video and talked about some of the pruning practices. I think we keep learning new things as we learn more about the beneficial insects and what we need to do to make sure we're supporting them and not just, you know, growing a beautiful landscape for us to enjoy, but for us to enjoy and to keep the pollinators healthy.
Very good points. Very good points indeed. We will take some calls. Jackie and Brule will give you a chance. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I have some brown-eyed Susans in my little bitty flower garden. I barely remember planting them, but they've taken over. They're in this, like, bloomed into this 6 by 6 foot area. They overtook the few butterfly bushes that are next to them. They look really nice now, but if they double in size next year, I'm in trouble. So obviously I should wait till the spring before cutting anything down, from what I hear. Or should I just dig, divide, and remove 3/4 of them? Because apparently they're going to come back like crazy.
I'm thinking to myself, oh, it might be Gold Star Rudbeckia, which I love, but has really spread in my landscape as well. It's really moved around. It's a beautiful plant. Like you said, the Rudbeckias are gorgeous, but crowding out some other things. So we typically, with perennials, and you probably know this, Jackie, but I'll remind others, if they bloom in the spring, we typically divide them in late summer or fall. They bloom in the fall, we do the opposite. But most gardeners have found that you divide them when you need to. So, you know, those are pretty tough, hardy plants. You know, birds eat the seeds, so we like to leave the seeds up, but those seeds they don't eat end up dropping in the soil, and that's how you get even more new plants. So you may want to divide out or just at least dig and remove those that are crowding out your other plants this fall and move them to a location where you can use them. If you don't have jumping worms, want to share them with somebody or compost those. Because I think you might want to get a jump on them. Otherwise, you can do it in the spring. It's a little easier. It's growth just as they're starting to peek through the ground. It's a little bit easier to dig them and move them. But they're such tough plants. I think you'd have good luck as long as you can give them good transplant care. We've got a good month or so before the ground freezes, hopefully even more. And you could get them reestablished if you're moving them. If you're just digging and composting, just take them from the outer, you know, where they're growing where you don't want them. But, yes, I feel your pain. When I lived in the city, I put in 3 purple coneflowers, and at the end of 3 years, I had nothing but purple coneflowers in my little backyard. Seemed like a good idea, so, yeah.
There you go, Jackie. Thank you so much for calling. Cindy in Menominee Falls, your turn. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have questions about Rose of Sharon. I have a neighbor who has a pink Rose of Sharon bush, and he got some volunteers, and asked me if I wanted some. So I took them, and they're very small, spindly. I planted them. They are doing fine, and they've even bloomed, but I'm wondering what I should do to care for them. And also I'm wondering, can they be pruned so that they grow more like a tree? Interestingly enough, it was a pink rose of Sharon, but some of the volunteers are white.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so you, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, so you bring up a good point. When we get seedlings from hybrid plants, often the seedling doesn't look like the plant we collected it from. It may have been one of the parents was white and one was red. We got a pink, or, you know, and you never know about the size. Yes, eventually you could prune it in to select one stem. I'm guessing you've got, maybe you still just have one stem as a young seedling, and you could train that one stem into a tree form. You're going to want to leave some lower branches, as many leaves as you can, because the more leaves, the more energy, the better the root, you know, the better energy going in to support the roots and develop a robust root system. You know, being the first year in a small plant, I'll tell you, the animal pressure this year was unbelievable. I thought it was my yard, but everybody I talked to had a lot of problems with ground squirrels and rabbits and deer. So you may want to just put a cylinder of hardware cloth, sink the bottom 4 inches in the ground to protect it from the voles. You may even want to put something on top to keep other animals from reaching in and nibbling on it, at least this first year to get it started. And then pruning over time, there's a great book, the American Horticultural Society, Pruning and Training, American Horticultural Society Pruning and Training. And the reason I like that book is it's real specific. So if you've got, you know, Rose of Sharon, it's going to give you some good guidance. It also has guidance on training plants into a tree form, even annuals. You know, if you want a geranium tree or a lantana tree. So you might want to check that out at the library, too. So, yes, so I think that should get you through the winter, and then over time you can gradually train it into a tree form.
There you go, Cindy. Thank you so much for calling. Susie in Escanaba, Michigan, what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about if you can, if wine corks can be used or utilized at all in potted plants, either in terms of mulch type on the top or at the bottom of the pot. Is that, could that be helpful or interfere with whatever?
Great question. I have one of my, I have a weeping fig that I used corks, flying corks, to just use as a mulch inside. Years ago at the San Francisco Flower Show, I was seeing they were using them as mulch in the garden. They were using them to make steppers. So I have seen them, you know, they're good, long-lasting kind of material. Putting things in the bottom of the pot, so if your pot has a drainage hole, there's no need to put anything in the bottom of the pot. If you are double potting, so you have a pot that does not have drainage holes, but you're setting a potted plant that's growing in a pot with drainage holes, you know, you could put the corks in the bottom. That elevates it. So as water collects in the outer pot with no drainage holes, it's elevated above that, and then just pour off that excess water once it reaches that pot with drainage holes. And hopefully I haven't confused everybody by this explanation.
I think I got it.
Okay, good. Thanks, Larry. But you don't want to really put them in a container for drainage, because it really, what happens is the water's just going to fill up from the bottom anyway. If you, you know, we can't water perfectly. That's why drainage holes are so important. And putting stones or corks or anything in the bottom really doesn't help improve drainage. And if you've got drainage holes, you really don't need to add anything. Some people add stones just so the pot doesn't tumble. But, you know, I think using, repurposing the corks as a mulch, I think they look kind of cool as a mulch. I've seen people make steppers out of them.
They hold water.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I think that's great, a good way to reuse those.
Susie, there you go. You have Melinda's permission.
Have more wine so you have more corks for mulching, right?
Oh, boy. Thanks again for calling. Marilyn in South Range, your turn. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. Well, our summer up here in South Range, wasn't the hottest. We have the Lake Superior very close by. So anyhow, my the food waste and everything that I compost doesn't always finish. You know, it's not finished compost by the time that I'd like to take it out. And I thought about getting one of these tumbling composters and taking, you know, getting the stuff out of the, it's a three-part, which which has fallen apart because a bear had gotten into it.
Oh, man.
Anyhow, but so it's really hard to take a fork to it and turn it. Do you think that would work, that
doing a tumbler?
Yeah.
With to start it in the black three-part composter and then transfer the stuff that isn't at the bottom, you know, the stuff that comes out of the bottom, into a tumbler and see if that would, by the middle of the summer or something like that, see if that would...
move it along, sure. What?
Yes, so a couple things with tumblers. One, it makes it a lot easier to turn. I get, you know how I always say you can skip the why the day you turn your compost pile or the workout facility because you get a good workout when you turn your compost pile. Tumblers are great. What I recommend is either a dual bin or two tumblers so that you know, you could put your food waste there right away, and then once you fill the one bin, add some soil and fertilizer, and it should be moist consistency of a damp sponge, and start turning it. And then as you get more new food scraps, you could put it in the other or the second bin of a dual bin. And then once that first bin is done, then you empty it, and the one that you were stockpiling in becomes your active compost pile. And that really speeds things up because part of the problem is anytime we add new material, and that's why a three bin is great. You can stockpile in one, actively compost in two, turn it into the third bin, back into the second bin, so you're not continually adding new material. Because every time we add new material, it slows down the process to some extent because you've got new material somewhat composted and composted. So either separating them out so that you're just actively composting and not adding new will speed things up, or try, you know, a dual bin system. And the other benefit is a lot of them are either metal or heavy-duty plastic that are less appealing to rodents. And so for many municipalities, this is what they're recommending. I'm not sure how bear-proof they would be, but you know, at least it would contain the material so it's not as accessible.
There you go, Marilyn. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Let's turn to Mike in Denmark next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I've got a question about got an open, sunny area. I want to plant some hydrangeas, but I have a black walnut tree in the yard. Are there any hydrangeas that would survive in those conditions?
Boy, and I'm cheating here real quick, trying to look up Morton Arboretum to see. They have a good listing of black walnut tolerant plants. For an open, sunny area, I would probably select the panicles, and I'm just seeing if it's resistant because, honestly, here we go, tolerant shrubs. I'm not seeing it listed. Now, the problem is... we don't have a thorough listing. All these lists are based on, oh, so-and-so had success growing it under black walnut, and this person didn't. You know, the most, the closer the plant to the closer the plant is to the black walnut, obviously, the more readily it's going to. And they list hydrangeas in general as sensitive, and it sounds like you already knew that, and we're hoping I knew something more than you. But I just would be very concerned. You could try, you know, a raised bed, but then it's got to be big enough to insulate the roots. And for a hydrangea, that's kind of crazy. Is it within 50 feet is where the biggest concentration is? But I've seen roots go out several hundred feet, and if they come in contact with the sensitive plants, you're kind of out of luck. So I would take a look if you have it at mortonarboretum.org. They've got a list of resistant plants. There is a list also on UW Extension. I think if you just do an internet search, Purdue has a pretty good list, and Ohio State University. Some of it, if you don't see them on either list, try it and see if it works. But hydrangeas are listed by Morton as sensitive, so I think you could try one and see, but you might be moving it once it starts wilting.
Mike, there you go. Thank you.
Better option for you.
And Elaine in Stockbridge, your turn. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good.
Great. I have a question about hog, H-O-G, peanut. It's overtaking my native perennial garden, and it's just, oh my goodness, it's spreading, and I've been having a difficult time maintaining it or getting rid of it.
You know, it's in my garden too. I don't know how it got there, and it is very aggressive, as you said. You know, it's got some beneficial uses. It is native, but it is very aggressive. One thing is trying to keep after it before it sets seed. I haven't done a very good job of that. Digging them as you find them. It's very tolerant of full sun to full shade, moist soils, any kind of soils, native to woodland edges, wet meadows. You know, it's a legume, so it fixes nitrogen, but it is a little too aggressive. So it's really, if you don't want to use a chemical and then just continually cutting it back, and I know how it is because I start out that way every season and then I find I miss a few. And so one thing is getting out before it sets seed, and then, you know, that taproot too, it's an annual. But I think we just miss that seeds that they drop, and there's so many of them, so some of them aren't growing yet. So pulling it out, I'd get out there now. You've reminded me I need to add that to my list. Get out there before it drops seed, and as an annual, that should help eliminate some next year, and you'll have to just do that a few years in a row. And then wherever that seed's coming from, if you can find the source, that would help too, because probably there's some that you're not aware of, same with me, that we need to kind of manage as well. So it's an annual, that's the good news, but the bad news is it's aggressive and it seeds heavily. And so, I would try. I think we'll both be busy, Elaine.
On that happy note.
Yes, really. Go plant a fall container.
Melinda, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it, and I hope you'll be back and be with us again.
Always love to talk to you and your listeners, Larry. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Melinda Myers, our guest today. She does a wonderful job. Check out MelindaMyers.com. For the dates and the personal appearances that she's got coming up. And Melinda Myers, Myers is spelled M-Y-E-R-S, MelindaMyers.com. Coming up Monday at this time, our physical therapists are back to talk about dealing with lower back pain and why following at-home exercise plans is so important. Stay with us. Hope you have a great weekend. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.